Welcome to Aware. We are dedicated to communicating information that inspires your positive growth and change. Are you interested in a peaceful planet? Are you interested in optimal health? Are you living with purpose? Are you enjoying your life? We realize each person can make a difference, and our mission is to empower your awareness. The choices that you make in every moment shape your life, and we encourage you to realize that you have your own answers and to always listen to your own truth. We invite you to stay aware.
Great. Hello. Welcome. 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 This is Lisa Garr, and you are watching the Aware Show's Radiant Body Summit. And I've kind of renamed this summit Body 3.0 because what we're really doing is we're upgrading our knowledge on the body and about the body. And this is how this show particularly proves that point, because I have, lived with an autoimmune disorder for a very long time. And I am so tired of hearing things like my immune system is attacking itself. What does that mean? What does that really mean? Or that I've got tiny food particles floating in my blood from leaky gut. If that was really the case, I would be dead. So what does that really mean? I mean, what does it really mean? If I had, pieces of broccoli floating in my blood, I would not be alive. I need to know what these things mean. So this is taking it to the next level of Body 3.0, and joining me is functional medicine specialist Dr. Tom O'Brien, who specializes exactly in autoimmune dysfunctions, in certain intolerances, gluten intolerances, and immune disease and metabolic disorders. Thank you so much for being here. This is going to be a hot, hot conversation, I can tell.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Lisa. And as we said just before the show started, yes, Mercury is retrograde right now.
Wow, whatever. It's been a week, man.
I can imagine.
A communications company, it is kicking our butt. So
I understand. Well, the show is an example of that. As the show was beginning with that really nice introduction about people trusting their inner voice and themselves, on the screen is a picture of some guy. I thought, wait a minute, that's not Lisa. Who's this guy? This is the Lisa Garr show. So it's like there's the communication is we have to make leaps. And that's what's going to happen today, is that your listeners will have to listen with new, as my mentor, George Goodhart, the founder of Applied Kinesiology, used to say, listen with ears that hear, look with eyes that see. So we have to get outside what we think we know and just listen to possibilities, and that's what I look forward to doing with you.
Yes, yes, I am, because I have been a student of this. This is my own body, and I want to learn more. I've interviewed dozens and dozens of people about those things I said. My immune system's attacking myself. Well, I'm seeing my immune system in there beating itself up, and I can't understand what that means. What does that mean, an autoimmune dysfunction? Please tell me.
Okay, well, in most cases, can't speak for all, but in most cases, your immune system is doing exactly what it's supposed to do to protect you. And as you understand the mechanisms of what we talk about today, it'll make sense.
Okay.
And so we don't want to shut down the immune system in general. Now, in some cases, a good friend of mine, for example, almost died from the autoimmune disease lupus. She had the worst case that UCLA had seen, the UCLA Lupus Center, in 20 years.
Wow.
And very, very few people have lived with this degree of lupus. She was 5'10". She was a model, international model. She lost 8 inches in height from the osteoporosis that developed as a result of the chemotherapy she had to do for 2 years.
Oh.
She had such severe osteoporosis, her bones broke in her back and collapsed. So she lost 8 inches in height, and all the pain that goes along with that. She went blind in one eye from it, partially blind in the other, and then we got our hands on her. And
wow, she survived?
And she's thriving now. She's just so tickled to have her life back, and no one can argue with her about the tenets that I'm going to tell you today about the development of autoimmune disease. So what is autoimmune disease? That was your first question.
Yes.
Autoimmune disease is when the immune system is attacking your own tissue. It's not what we want, but the question that has to be asked is, why is the immune system attacking your own tissue? Why is that happening? Okay. So that's what we're going to go through in a sequential order here, because as people understand that, it starts to make perfect sense as to what you need to do to begin to, and as the researchers say, arrest the development of autoimmune diseases. How do you arrest it? Can you reverse it? Well, sometimes, but you certainly can arrest it. You should be able to get better, and not by any specific pharmaceutical. Pharmaceuticals, and let's just nail that right now, if you need the drugs, you take them. Don't be foolish about this, and don't be rigid with a belief system. If you need the drugs, you take them. But you also address, why is my body needing these drugs right now, and what can I do to reduce that need so I can function and heal without the drugs? That's a sensible approach. You know, people say, I'm not going to take steroids. Well, in some cases, you may die without the right medications, depending on the disease you have and how progressed it's gotten. So don't be foolish. Be smart and learn. Ask the right questions. If your doctors don't know, then you need to add other doctors to your healthcare team. You don't fire them necessarily, but you bring on other experts. You don't ask a dentist about foot problems.
Right.
You don't ask a lupus specialist about, why is my body attacking itself? Because they don't know. They don't know. Their job and what they study as best as they can is this. They're dialed down. We call it the silos of medicine, you know, like a corn silo on a farm. Everybody's got their silo, the rheumatologist, the neurologist, the gastroenterologist.
Right.
They all have their silo, and hopefully you've got a really good gastroenterologist if that's what you need. But your autoimmune disease is a systemic problem. It's a whole body problem. You pull at a chain, the chain breaks at the weakest link. It's at one end, the middle, the other end. It's your heart, your brain, your liver, your kidneys, wherever your genetic weak link is. It's determined by genetics and antecedents, meaning how you've lived your life. If you have been exposed to a lot of mercury, you've got mercury poisoning, that weakens some specific links.
Okay.
But wherever the weak link is, that's where the chain's going to break, right? So it might be your brain, and you start getting symptoms of MS. It might be your joints, and you start getting symptoms of rheumatoid. It might be your skin, and you start getting symptoms of psoriasis. Wherever the weak link is. But the mechanism that's pulling at the chain is what you have to address. Does that make sense?
Yes, it actually makes the most sense, and you're so clear about that. That makes the most sense I've heard, because I guess in my case, my weak link is my thyroid, because of my mother, grandmother, three generations of thyroid disease in our family, all raised in the Midwest, mind you, so they're all, you know, in that, there's a high concentration of people that are lacking a little bit of iodine in that area of the world.
Do you know why it's called the goiter belt? It's because there's no iodine in the soil, because there was never an ocean or a sea in the Midwest hundreds of thousands of years ago. So there's no iodine in the soil. So you don't have that problem on the coast, but you have it in the middle of the country.
Got it.
That's why thyroids are, if the weak link is your thyroid, and it is for you genetically, then the antecedent is that you're living in an area with not much iodine, which makes your thyroid more vulnerable. So the weak link in the chain was here, and where you were born and raised made that weak link weaker.
Uh-huh. Good thing I moved to California.
There you go. You look like a California girl.
I do. I'm sorry.
With the water in the background, you know, it's nice.
Yeah. There's my iodine right there.
There you go.
So then let's also talk about this whole idea. So is my immune system beating up my thyroid, and why? So you said tissue. It's not my immune system isn't beating up itself. It's beating up a tissue. In my case, my thyroid tissue. That's distinction number one.
Yes.
Among many. What is my thyroid doing that makes the immune system want to attack it?
Nothing. Your thyroid is just hanging out, being a good thyroid, trying.
Okay.
There's a number of lifestyle things that contribute specifically to thyroid. For example, if you're in an elevator of a hotel and the elevator door is open, can you tell the swimming pool's on that floor right away?
No.
You don't smell the swimming pool?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yes, yes. Yeah, if you open to it, of course, yeah.
No, it's not of course. Most people don't smell it, but you do. It's an of course for you. You don't see it, but you smell it. You have receptor sites are like catcher's mitts, and the pitcher throws the ball to the catcher. You have receptor sites on the outside of the cells facing the bloodstream for all of your hormones. That's how hormones get inside the cells, is that the pitcher throws the fastball to the catcher, so thyroid hormones going by in the bloodstream, and it goes right into the thyroid receptor.
Okay.
And estrogen will not go into a thyroid receptor. Testosterone, progesterone, melatonin, serotonin, insulin, they do not go into thyroid receptors. Only thyroid goes into a thyroid receptor.
Okay.
And then the receptor is like the door lock that gets unlocked and opens so that the thyroid hormone can go inside the cell. That's what receptor sites do, is capture from the bloodstream the specific molecules that they're designed to capture, and then escort them inside the cell so the hormone can do whatever it's supposed to do,
Okay. Whatever
the hormone is, right? So there are three substances that compete for thyroid receptor sites, three toxins from our environment that compete with thyroid receptor sites.
Okay.
That compete with thyroid hormone on thyroid receptor sites.
Okay.
The first and the most common one, chlorine. So anyone that opens the door, when the elevator doors open, they can smell the pools on this floor. You have a chlorine sensitivity, most likely.
Interesting.
When chlorine goes onto a thyroid receptor site, let me back up. So thyroid hormone going by in the bloodstream, it goes into the thyroid receptor site, opens the door, and it goes right in. But when chlorine's in your bloodstream and it goes into a thyroid receptor site, it just sits there. It doesn't open the door. It sits there. So your receptor site gets full of chlorine molecules. So then now a thyroid hormone molecule comes by, but the pitcher throws a fastball into the catcher, but there's three baseballs in the catcher's mitt. It can't get in.
Mm-hmm.
Those are the people that have normal thyroid hormone levels, but they have thyroid symptoms. And because of bloodstream, there's plenty of hormone in the bloodstream. Mm. It can't get into the cell. So your TSH might go up, your brain saying, I need more hormone, because the cells are deficient in hormone, but you do a blood test and there's plenty of hormone in the bloodstream. That's why TSH is not a great marker to use as the only marker as to how to treat a thyroid imbalance. It's a valuable tool, a valuable biomarker as a component of a test, not the diagnostic marker slam dunk, oh, your TSH is high, let's give you hormone. No. What's their hormone levels?
Wait, does that mean it's floating in the bloodstream and that's the reason why the test is so high?
Well, it means your thyroid hormone's floating in the bloodstream. It can't get in the cell because the cells, the receptors are blocked up. Does that make sense to you?
Completely. I've never heard it explained that way.
It's 101. In functional medicine, it's 101. It's just a basic concept.
So it's floating in my bloodstream too much. So now, I mean, wow.
Well, not too much, because if you do a blood test, your blood thyroid hormone levels are normal. And for many, many people, they have normal hormone levels, but their TSH is high.
And what's normal, by the way? What is a normal thyroid hormone level?
It depends on the lab. It varies with each lab. So it depends on the technology of what they're doing. So you look at the reference range on the test. And now for TSH, it's different because it's the same across the board. There's only one test they do for TSH. But for hormone measurements, depending on the lab, the reference ranges can vary. And the question is, what type of hormone are you checking? Are you checking T4, which 90% of all the thyroid hormone the body makes is T4, but your cells can't use T4. It's got to be converted to T3. So if you're not checking T4 and T3, you have to check them because you may have more than enough T4, but very deficient T3, which will have your TSH say, I need more hormone, because the T3 is not going in the cell. But there's plenty of T4, so that's a conversion problem, most commonly due to a selenium deficiency.
Selenium.
That's why all of our thyroid patients eat Brazil nuts. I have them eat two or three Brazil nuts a day because they're the highest source of selenium.
I have to get my notes here. Okay, selenium, really? Okay. Now, chlorine, all right, so I need to take notes on this. So what is free T3?
Best thing, a basic for any person with a thyroid imbalance to do, the first thing you do, always the first thing, where you get the most exposure to chlorine? In the shower, because you inhale the steam and it goes right through the lungs into the bloodstream.
Interesting.
So you put a chlorine shower filter on your shower.
Okay.
They're really simple. They're $50. You just unscrew the shower head, you screw the filter on there, and then you screw the shower head on the end of the filter. It takes 10 minutes to do.
Okay.
Really, not complicated. You change it out every 6 months. And you notice your skin feels better because there's not as much chlorine exposure. Your hair feels better. All those things will occur as a result.
Interesting. Interesting. So maybe is that why people with thyroid issues have dry skin and brittle nails and thinning eyebrows?
That's an internal problem, but the chlorine exposure on the outside will aggravate it and make it worse.
Okay. Okay. All right. So now let's talk about the TSH levels. What is a normal range for a thyroid-stimulating hormone?
Good. So what is TSH? TSH is thyroid-stimulating hormone. It's produced in the pituitary. So the big kahuna in the brain is the hypothalamus. It's monitoring everything. And it notices, oh, looks like we need some more thyroid hormone. And the pituitary sends the message to the thyroid, to the adrenals, to the ovaries. It's kind of the production manager, watching the manufacturer of the different hormones. The pituitary, so the hypothalamus gives a message to the pituitary, says, we need some more hormone here. So the pituitary sends out the message to the thyroid, I need some more hormone. That message is called thyroid-stimulating hormone, TSH. So it's the pituitary's way of telling the thyroid how much hormone to make. So is TSH a measure of thyroid function? No. It's a measure of what the brain thinks the thyroid needs, but it's not a measure of what the thyroid is doing.
It's a matter of the hormone function?
TSH is a messenger. It's just a messenger that the hypothalamus says, I need this much. It tells the operations manager, have your factory make this much. So the operations manager, which is the pituitary, sends out TSH, make this much hormone. It's a messenger.
Hmm.
The message, it's a directive messenger. Okay?
Interesting.
So that's why it's not a measure of thyroid function. It's a measure of how much hormone your brain thinks your body needs. That's really important, but it's not a measure of thyroid function.
Interesting. Interesting, because I've gotten very elevated TSH counts, but I feel fine.
What about your T4 levels?
T4 and T3 are within range in the threes.
Yeah. So that means your body's not using the hormone you're making.
It's floating around and it's spiking up the test, which is so interesting.
No. It's floating around, not getting into the receptors and going inside the cell.
Okay.
So that's true. But the determination by the hypothalamus comes from inside the cells. The hormones outside the cells, the hormones in the bloodstream. The bloodstream is just a highway. It's just carrying a whole lot of traffic. There's semi-trucks, there's motorcycles, there's cars. It's just a highway.
Okay.
So your hormone at your normal level of T4, T3 is in the bloodstream. So you've got plenty of traffic on the highway. But,
okay.
You know, if the cars don't come into the mall, the merchants won't do very well.
Right.
You can have all the traffic in the world going by. So you've got all the hormone that you need. You've got normal levels of hormone, but they're not getting into the cell to be used.
Now, did you say there were three things that block that from happening? Chlorine, were there two others?
Yes.
Okay.
Fluoride, that's toothpaste, and bromide. Bromide's in a lot of baked goods.
Huh, okay. Hmm.
And all three bind on thyroid receptor sites.
Hmm. So fluoride-free toothpaste, getting a shower filter for the chlorine, which I've always hated, which is really interesting. And we have a water filtration system in the house, but I don't know if it tests. I mean, chlorine's very high in Los Angeles, so interesting. Okay, I'm trying to broaden this a little bit, but I'm hoping people are understanding from my experience here. But okay, so now we're understanding.
What your listeners are getting right now is an example of looking at a health problem from a functional medicine perspective.
Yes, absolutely.
Not in the silo of endocrinology, hormone problems. So we're not looking just at your TSH levels are high. Well, why are your TSH levels high? Why? Why? That's the million-dollar question.
Yes, yes.
And so if you need hormone in the meantime, you take hormone, but then you also work with someone to explore, why is this happening? Why is my body making enough hormone, but TSH says I need more? Why do I need more than the normal amount? What's not working right? So you need a healthcare practitioner that will explore that with you. And there are many things on the checklist to explore.
I know. This is such a huge topic. And I want to ask you about the Synthroid, Natrathroid, and the other types of bioidentical thyroid supplements. There's many on the market that that are not the medical route, that are available, that have high amounts of iodine, kelp, seaweed, dulse, those types of things. How do you know what works for your body? Is there a way to really tell?
Yes.
Because there is a way to tell.
Yes.
Okay. And do you recommend a specific one?
No. You use the one that works. How do you know it works? You have biomarkers, like blood markers or other markers, to say, here's the problem. Here's how bad it is right now. Okay, I don't like that, but here's how it is. Okay. Then you start your protocols, and you go, and X number of months down the road, you recheck. They better be better. You know, the biomarkers better say you're on the right track. If they don't say you're on the right track, then you say, oh, you go back to square one and say, okay, that one didn't work. And most healthcare practitioners from a functional medicine perspective have a checklist. Okay, this is the most common. You know, they look at the big picture for you. This is most common. All right, that didn't seem to make the difference. Let's go to the next one. All right, let's go to the next one. So as a healthcare consumer, you have to get, look, for the first time in the history of human civilization, for the very first time, children have a shorter projected lifespan than their parents. This was published in the New England Journal of Medicine 8 years ago.
Why?
All the children today are going to get sick earlier, get diseases earlier, and die earlier than their parents will.
Wow.
First time in history. That's how bad it is right now. Second point. The World Health Organization rates the United States second in overall quality of health. Second from the bottom of 53 industrialized countries. What we do here does not work. It doesn't work. Our children are dying earlier than we are, than the parents are, and we're ranked second from the bottom, but we spend more than any other country on the planet per person for healthcare. We spend more. So when we go into our clinics, our orthopedic clinics, everything looks so beautiful, you know, nice furnishings, lovely furniture, really expensive equipment, and it doesn't work. Overall, the whole system doesn't work. You have to get that as a listener on this show today. You have to get that. The system doesn't work.
I have something to say about that. So my I believe that we're in this major gap right now. And my father is a retired MD, orthopedic, and I had asked him about the leaky gut, and he didn't know about it. And because when he went to medical school 30-something years ago, this information was not available. And he would have had to get triple
PhD. Well, it was available. I was out there talking about it. Many of us were, and we were considered nutcases. Because when people don't know something, they try to put down and demean the people who say, hey, look at this study, look at this.
That's what the medical establishment does, is it puts it down if it doesn't know about it. You are absolutely right, yes. So in this last 15 years, 20 years, people like you have been touting, this is the information, here's the information, here's the information. And just now, since we've hit this critical mass of disease, people are finally starting to look into the direction of functional medicine and saying, wait, maybe this has validity because people are actually getting well. But it involves so much more. This is key. It involves so much more education on the part of the patient than it ever, ever has.
And that's the problem. You're absolutely right. And that's the problem in our culture today, that everybody wants it easy. Everybody wants
to. We've been conditioned that way. We have been conditioned. Take the pill, do the surgery. Yes, absolutely, for decades.
And the result is you're going to die earlier, and your kids are going to die earlier than you.
Well, and as a patient of someone with an autoimmune dysfunction, I do know it takes it's pretty much like a part-time job. I am testing and testing and testing and testing urine, blood, stool, saliva, you know, and sometimes I don't even have the time to get all the tests done, so I go 6 months in between tests, and that's too long. So it's definitely a slippery knot. So it takes some – so how do you empower the patient to really be able to keep up with the changing information that comes in on your level of functional medicine?
The first thing is people have to realize that they don't know what they don't know.
Right.
If you don't know that you don't know this, you live in bliss, right? So there are people that know this. There are people that don't know this and want to know it. And there are people that don't know they don't know. So if you're in the don't know that you don't know, not anymore, because you're listening to this show. And this is all science. It's all science. So now you're in the category of you don't know this and you want to know this. So that's mm-hmm. the question that you're asking. And how do you get to the stage of you know this as a consumer? You know enough that you need to know. You find a functional medicine practitioner who's certified. And there's hundreds of them now around the country. I'm on the faculty of the Institute for Functional Medicine, and it takes 3.5 years to get certified with us. This is after you've got your MD or your DC or your DO or you're an acupuncturist. And then when you come to our courses and start to learn this, we give you the big picture. We have a 5-day program for doctors called Applied Functional Medicine in Clinical Practice. And then we've got them from 6:30 in the morning till 7 at night for 5 days. And we just introduce these concepts like, what? What? Chlorine binds on thyroid receptors? What? I didn't know that. You know, but we teach them the big picture, and here's how you do your new patient questionnaires. Here's the history you want. Any doctor that takes a 5-minute history for the first visit, that's not the person you really want to have investigated.
Right, right. You know? It's definitely a process, which is actually a good point. Okay.
I'm going to give you an example of this. I'm going to give you an example. This is really good. I'm getting kind of warmed up now.
Okay.
in Sweden, they've got socialized medicine. They have records on everybody. And they poke a newborn's finger at birth, and they put that drop of blood on a card, and they dry the card. They've got 30 million cards because they've been doing this since the 1950s, 1960s. Well, they took people who were currently diagnosed with schizophrenia, so they're in their 30s or 40s, and they went back and they looked at their cards at birth, at that drop of blood at birth.
Wow.
And they looked to see, do these babies have elevated antibodies to gluten? Now, gluten is the family of proteins in most grains, but in this case, the gluten that's in wheat.
Okay.
To see, did they have elevated antibodies to the proteins of wheat? Babies don't make antibodies at birth. Excuse me. So the antibodies that a baby has at birth come from the mother. And how does that happen? In the 8th month of pregnancy, mom's body starts sending IgG antibodies down to baby. Okay, baby, you're going to come out soon. Here's some antibodies to cats. We have cats at home. They're nice cats. No need to freak out. So here's some antibodies so you don't overreact.
Got it.
Or we live in the woods. And there's leaves that fall down, you know, leaves decay, so there's some mold in the air. Here's some antibodies to the mold that you're going to be exposed to, so you don't have to freak out.
Got it.
So babies being primed for the environment that they're about to come into. And what environment are they coming into? Mom's environment.
Right.
It's a beautiful system. It's just beautiful.
Yep.
So they look for the antibodies to gluten at birth, which would have meant mom's sensitivity.
Mm-hmm.
That mom's passing IgG antibodies, all the IgG goes down to baby. What did they find? Those babies in the top 10% of antibodies to gluten had a 70% increased likelihood of developing schizophrenia 30 to 40 years later.
Wow.
Those babies in the top 5% of antibodies to gluten had a 240% increased risk of developing schizophrenia 30 to 40 years later.
Jeez. Oh, my God.
So I show this study to the doctors, and they sit there like deer in the headlights. Like, I didn't know that. And I said, so what's the clinical value of this study? Here's the clinical value. All women of childbearing age, especially if there's a family history of any cognitive disorders, any mental disorder, depression, anxiety, schizophrenia, bipolar, especially if there's any history of that, women of childbearing age just get checked to see if they have a sensitivity to gluten. You just need to be checked accurately for that. And if you do, Mrs. Patient, here's the study that says for some people, not everybody, but for some people, it affects the development of baby's brain so that 30 to 40 years later, they are much more vulnerable to not having a brain that's functioning properly. So let's put you on a gluten-free diet, nutrient-dense, very healthy gluten-free diet, at least until after your pregnancy. And that makes sense. That's
amazing.
Just good science. That's
how do you tell if the mother has that sensitivity? That what's the your favorite test?
You know, the testing for gluten is notoriously incomplete. That when your doctor tests, if it comes back positive, you got a problem. But for 50% of the people that we know have the problem, it comes back negative.
In blood tests?
Blood tests. So there's only one blood test. It came out 4.5 years ago. It's accurate. It's called Cyrex Labs, C-Y-R-E-X, CyrexLabs.com. So our listeners can go to that website, and they can read about the test and ask their doc to do it, but their docs won't know about it, and they likely won't do it because it's not in their catalog, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
But you go to your doc, and if that doesn't work, you go to my website. It's thedr.com, thedr.com, and you can order it there. But it's much better to get it from your doctor so they learn about this so that for all their future patients, they see that there's finally an accurate test out there.
That is amazing, yes. I mean, I discovered that I was gluten intolerant 10 years ago. And at the same time, you know, I have a 12-year-old, so I realized about 5 years ago that that was her problem as well. And so both of us had really clear signs. We eat gluten, we threw up. I mean, that was pretty good for us. We got it. But for most people, it's not as clear. So,
Here's a question for you. How often do you have a little gluten exposure now? Once a month? Once every 2 months?
Zero. I know it. I know. And if it's anywhere, we will instantly get sick. If it's in the environment, we will get sick.
Perfect. Now, because you have an autoimmune disease, I strongly suggest you do Cyrex test. It's array number 3 is the gluten test, but that you do it, and because you're likely going to find that it's going to come back positive. And then you'll have an awakening. There's a whole world out there. For example, a paper was published last week. They looked at 24 different types of green tea. 8 of the 24 have toxic levels of gluten.
I can't eat yerba mate. I cannot do yerba mate. Bad. Interesting. Okay. Someone's asking about the links between antidepressants, Wellbutrin, and anti-anxiety medication, and the sensitivities you were talking about in terms of what did you call it? The antibodies.
The antibodies. Yeah. The gluten antibodies. Yes. The most common cognitive complaint in celiac disease, which is where most of the research has been done, there's over 19,000 articles, the most common cognitive complaint is depression, most common. And especially those people that have had to do more than one medication, that one seems to work for a little bit then doesn't work anymore, that it's most commonly, not always, but most commonly a sensitivity to gluten. So for that person, I would say you stay on your medication because it's helping you function, and do the test from Cyrex to see do you have the sensitivity to gluten? Because 73% of the people that have a sensitivity to gluten have something called hypoperfusion. It's a great Scrabble word.
Okay.
Hypoperfusion, it means a lack of blood flow into the brain. And 73% of people with the sensitivity to gluten have a lack of blood flow into the brain. And if that area of the brain that's hypoperfused is in the back, called the occipital lobes, that person's very vulnerable to seizures. If it's on the side, the parietal lobes, they're very vulnerable to headaches and migraines. If it's in the front, it's anxiety and depression. It just depends on where the weak link is in the brain structure as to where the hypoperfusion will manifest, which determines what symptoms you get.
Okay. Okay. So
do the test for gluten sensitivity from Cyrex.
Wow. So the gluten sensitivity can cause the lack of blood flow to the brain and certain cortexes, causing either anxiety, depression. Is that correct?
That is correct. Now, they also published studies in autism, and they found all of the autistic children that have the same dysfunction, like repetitive motion. They keep picking up the pen, putting it there, picking up the pen, putting it there, picking up the pen. All the kids that do that, they had hypoperfusion in the same area of the brain. All the kids that are desensitized and won't talk, that they're silent, they had hypoperfusion in the same area of the another area, but all of them.
Wow.
Area of the brain. It's a lack of blood flow that contributes to the problems. That's why my gluten summit is so great, you know, because I interviewed 29 of the world's leaders on this topic about gluten sensitivity. One of them was Dr. Daniel Amen. Dr. Amen has done over 40,000 studies of blood flow into the brain, 40,000. And he talks about how when you have a certain area that's not getting enough blood or too much blood, the symptoms that consistently show there. And when you change their diet, the blood flow balances out and those symptoms go away or are reduced.
Wow. So, we had Dr. Amen on this summit as well a few days ago. I mean, he's going to be on the summit. This is so groundbreaking. Now, is this specifically with wheat, or is, and you said gluten is found in green tea, but what about other grains, about corn and rice, and can you talk about those?
Gluten is not bad for you. Bad gluten is bad for you.
What's the difference?
Gluten is the term for a family of proteins in most grains. There's gluten in corn, there's gluten in rice, there's gluten in quinoa, there's gluten in amaranth, there's gluten in wheat. But it's the toxic glutens of wheat, rye, and barley when we talk about gluten sensitivity. That's the family that we're talking, because those glutens are different than any other glutens. Now, some people can be sensitive to rice. They can be. Some people can be sensitive to artichokes or to bananas or to quinoa or to amaranth. But for the topic of gluten sensitivity, it's wheat, rye, and barley. Now, just like in college, there are different levels of understanding. You know, you have to start with 101, and then you go to 201, and then you go to 301, then you go to 401, then you get a master's, then you get a PhD. There's different levels. So the concept that gluten is not bad for you, bad gluten is bad for you, is 101. So
okay.
Don't throw all the grains in the same category. It's just wheat, rye, and barley.
But how would you know if corn or even buckwheat or all those, I mean, how would you know?
You have to have an accurate test done. And in terms of testing, so much of the testing out there is limited in its value. Here's the reason why, and your doctors do not know this. It's just embarrassing for all of us. Because I've been talking about this for 3 years, no, 5 years now. And still, well, some labs are picking up on it, but your immune system is the armed forces of your body. It's there to protect you.
Okay.
There's an Army, an Air Force, a Marines, a Coast Guard, a Navy, IgA, IgG, IgE, IgM, white blood cells. There are many different branches of the immune system, many.
Okay.
So when your doctor does a 90-food panel for you, oh, no, let's back up even more. When your doctor does the skin prick test for you, that's checking for an IgE reaction. If that comes back positive, you got a problem with that food. whatever it is.
Uh-huh.
But if it comes back negative, does that mean you don't have a problem with the food? No. It means you don't have an IgE problem with the food. It means okay. that the Air Force hasn't been called out. What about the Army? Well, I don't know. We checked the Air Force. And so our doctors, our allergists, were trained. It's the skin prick test came out in the 1950s. And many are still thinking the way when it was first created. It's a really valuable test, but it's a component of a comprehensive evaluation. It's not comprehensive.
It's too broad, huh?
No, it's too limited. It's too limited. It only looks at the Air Force. It doesn't look at anything else.
Okay.
When your doctor does a 90 food panel, they say, well, Mrs. Patient, we can do this 90 food panel to see if you have any allergies to 90 different foods, and it's only $240 or whatever the price
is. I took that one, yeah.
Yeah, and that's an IgG test. Hmm. So that's the Army. So if that comes back positive, you got a problem. But if that comes back negative, does that mean you don't have a problem? No, it means that the Army wasn't called out. What about the Marines? That's IgA.
Most people stop there. Uh-huh.
That's yes. exactly right. So Cyrex, Cyrex Labs does IgA, IgG, IgM. So they look at three branches of the armed forces. Now there's another lab that came out and they're doing two branches. But that's a big groundbreaking compared to the last 50 years, every lab only does one branch of the armed forces. Some will do IgA, some will do IgG, some will do IgE. But that's archaic thinking. That's the way we used to think. But that's not modern. It's not current. That you have. And for all of our listeners out there, you go back to your doctor and you say, hey, I understand that the skin prick test said that I didn't have a problem with wheat. But if I eat it, I don't feel so good. Now, isn't it possible that other branches of the armed forces are fighting this and not just the skin prick one?
Mm-hmm.
And if the doctor says, no, this is fine, then you need a new doctor. But if the doctor says, well, that's an interesting idea, then you've got a really good doctor who's acknowledging he never thought about that, but I'll look into that for you.
That's so interesting because, I mean, I do have a functional medicine doctor, and it's how I've been able to get to feeling so good now. And I know that he's always researching and always learning. And it's great that you can find functional medicine doctors on your website too, which is the THEDRS,
THEDR.com.
You can find a functional medicine specialist on there as well. The guy I go to is Dr. Gil Kajiki. I don't know if you know who he is, but he has really been helpful with all of my testing and so forth. But so, okay, let me get to the, so we've talked about gluten. We've talked about these different types of tests. I know. There's so much to cover.
Autoimmunity, aren't we?
Autoimmunity, inflammation. I had this whole list of 20 questions, but what you're even talking about is beyond my list of the questions, which is so interesting. All right, so here's the thing is you said that the whole idea that our wheat has been modified over the past 50 years and it's genetically modified is not why people are so allergic to gluten. That's another Body 3.0 mythbuster here.
Yes.
We thought this was the Franken wheat and that was all the in the news and so forth, and I bought that one. I thought that was true. But you're saying that's not necessarily the case. It's not the genetically modified wheat, right?
Well, it's not only the GMO wheat. It certainly is a component. By the way, there is no GMO wheat commercially available. Not yet. It's coming soon, but it's hybridized. But it's not genetically modified. It's never been allowed, but it is being allowed now. It's been approved, so the fields are growing now, so soon GMO wheat will be here. But the wheat has not been genetically modified. It's been hybridized.
What does that mean? To grow yields, higher yields?
That's the purpose, to grow more tonnage per acre. It's not a bad thing to be hybridized. It means, like with an apple tree, if you cut a branch off an apple tree and you splice it into another apple tree, then you can have yellow apples and red apples on the same tree.
Mm-hmm.
That's hybridization.
Okay.
And that's kind of like what they do with wheat. But the GMO aspect is coming really soon. It's going to be terrible.
Wow.
But what they currently do now, if it's not organic, is that they spray the fields 2 to 3 weeks before they harvest with the GMO chemical glyphosate. all the wheat fields get sprayed. I'm not sure all, but I believe it's all of them, or almost all of them, get sprayed with glyphosate. Why? Kills the plant. And when they kill the plant, it doesn't plug up the combines when they harvest it. So everyone is eating breads that have glyphosate residue in them for convenience of not plugging up the combines. And glyphosate will cause intestinal permeability. It activates your immune system to fight it. It's been shown to cause cancers in test animals and intestinal permeability in humans. So that's so the wheat.
On organic crops, you said, or no?
No. Not organic. Not organic is safe. Organic, as far as I know, organic is safe.
Wheat. Okay.
But that's not why there's such an increase now. It's a fivefold increase. Mayo Clinic found 9,733 samples of blood from airmen from the 1950s. This blood was still good. It was frozen. It was still good. If you're a researcher, you just went to heaven. I mean, you've got all of this data, you know, this available to you now to check different things. And the reason it's so rare is because the rubber stoppers on the tubes of blood back in the 1950s would decay within a year or two, and then they'd be no good anymore. The blood would be exposed and damaged.
Okay.
But there was a leak in the Freon machine of this container storing this blood, so it's just a little bit colder in there, and just froze the rubber completely so it didn't decay and break down.
Interesting.
So the blood was still good. So all these researchers go, oh, look, we've gone to heaven. Look at all this wonderful. And they check these airmen. There weren't many women in the Air Force in the 1950s. They checked to see how many of these guys had silent celiac disease, which means their blood values were high, but these guys didn't know. They may not have had stomach problems. For every one person that has abdominal problems with celiac, there are eight that don't. It's in their joints or in their brain or somewhere else. So they looked to see how many of these people had silent celiac disease. And what they found, just under 50 of them had silent celiac. So they looked to see what happened to these guys over 30, 40 years now, because they're veterans, you know, so from the 1950s, and when they died, when did they get diseases, when did they die? And then they took 9,000 samples of same age healthy men that came to Mayo Clinic for a physical in Humboldt County, Minnesota. And they looked at how many of these guys had elevated antibodies to gluten and didn't know it. And
right.
They silent celiac disease. They found that there is a fourfold increase today, four times more today than there was in the 1950s. Four times more.
And wow. Said,
this is getting, no question, this is getting worse. And we know the projected lifespan for people now if they're diagnosed, and it's almost a fourfold earlier death than the guys back in the 1950s.
Oh, my God.
Get it, and they die earlier than 50, 60 years ago. And the question, oh, then there's a second study that just came out, because that study was 2009. This one just came out a couple months ago in Brazil. And they took people over 60, how many of them had elevated antibodies or had any indicators of celiac disease, and they took children from the same area, the same number of children, and how many of them have elevated antibodies. And they found there was a fivefold increase of children today with this problem than people who are currently in their 60s. So it's another validation. More people are getting it. They're getting sick earlier, and they're going to die earlier.
Why? What is your conclusion? Yes.
It's really simple. It's called a loss of oral tolerance. Now, this comes down to the mechanisms in autoimmune disease. It's the loss of oral tolerance. What does that mean? When you eat a salad and you're chewing the salad and you swallow every morsel of food, 70% of your immune system's in your gut. It's not in your bloodstream, it's in the gut. 70% of everything to fight cancer, colds, flus, viruses, it's in the gut. Why? Because every morsel of what you eat that goes down there, your immune system has to say, oh, what's this? What's this? Is this okay? Oh, that's celery. That's fine. Come on in. What's this? What's this? It's okay. Oh, that's carrots. That's fine. Come on in. What's this? Oh, this is a bacteria. Kill it. And then the immune system gets activated to protect you.
Okay.
Because how much of our food do you think is sterile? None of it. None of it, unless right. you nuke it. If you nuke it, it's dead. It's dead yeah. food. But everything's got some bacteria, a little mold, a little yeast on it. Everything does. We don't like think about it, go, ooh, ooh. But it's at a microscopic level, but there's some. And so our immune system is protecting us from any toxins, any poisons, any invaders, any parasites. Every morsel of what we eat. How come you go to a picnic and only 4 people out of 20 that ate the potato salad get sick?
Yeah.
Because the 4 people have a compromised immune system. It's a weakened immune system in the gut. It's not working well enough. For everybody else, you say, what's it? Oh, this is a parasite. Oh, just get rid of it. It's fine. What's it? Oh, this is a parasite. Yeah, get rid of that. More help. I need a little more help. This is a lot of parasite. And so we get more help in there. You deal with it. It goes out. You feel fine for the potato salad. But if your immune system's compromised, what's this? Whoa, I don't know. This is something big. Boy, this is a 7'2", 300-pound guy, and I weigh 140 pounds. I better not go up against this. And then that pathogen gets in your body, and you get sick. You get loose bowels and diarrhea and fever from the potato salad.
Uh-huh.
Immune system. So your immune system is checking everything, and we eat 5 to 7 tons of food in our lifetime. 5 to 7 tons of food.
Wow, that's a lot of work for the immune system.
Exactly. And every forkful has to be checked. Every forkful
wow.
is either inflammatory or anti-inflammatory. It either activates the immune system or it calms down the immune system. Every forkful. There's no neutrals except healthy water. That's the only neutral. Everything
is
else.
The loss else, of oral tolerance? Is that what that is?
Loss of oral tolerance is when these toxins come down and your body's been, and there's so many toxins we're exposed to today. The mercury in the fish, the lead in the vegetables, the arsenic in the rice, the chemicals, the bisphenol A from the water bottles, because the sun hits the water bottle and it melts this stuff that softens plastic. It gets in your water, it causes cancer. It's called bisphenol A. Mm-hmm. We're exposed to so many things, thousands and thousands of chemicals. Your immune system in the gut is going boom, 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 fighting this, fighting this, fighting this, fighting this. And here comes gluten from wheat, rye, and barley, which is a mild irritant at first. It's a mild irritant at all. And so your body says, oh, it's gluten. All right, you go buy it. That's gluten. But eventually, because your body, boom, 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 oh, gluten. And now you make antibodies to gluten. And when you make antibodies to gluten, it's the only food that we know this is true for. Every other food, as far as I know, we don't know if it's true, but we know it's true for gluten. When you get a vaccination for measles, they give you a shot of the bug measles, the actual bug.
Uh-huh.
And your brain says, whoa, what's this? This is not good for me. I better fight this. And you, general, and in your immune system, you have Army, Air Force, Marine Corps generals sitting down with nothing to do. General, you now are General Measles. Take care of this. General Measles builds an assembly line. Takes months to build. The assembly line starts producing soldiers. They're called antibodies.
Uh-huh.
And they're trained to go after measles. Uh-huh. They go after measles. They're in the bloodstream. Now remember, your bloodstream is just a highway, and there's no lanes of traffic. Everything's just bouncing around in there. But they go after measles and firing these chemical bullets called cytokine to destroy the measles. When all the measles bugs are destroyed, General Measles is watching this, and he says, all right, turn off the assembly line. We don't need more soldiers right now. You shouldn't have antibodies to measles in your bloodstream right now, unless you've been exposed, and then
okay.
you should. But General Measles is vigilant the rest of his life. The rest of his life. He's called a memory B cell.
Okay.
And if measles ever comes into the bloodstream again, he just has to flip the switch. He doesn't have to build the assembly line. That's why if you go to Africa, you need vaccinations for yellow fever and dengue fever and all these strange diseases months and months and months ahead of time. But if you go back to visit 15 years later, you just need a booster shot 2 weeks before you go. Everybody knows about booster shots. You just have to wake up the memory B cells to yellow fever, and then you're protected. Well, the only food, as far as I know, that has memory B cells is gluten.
Really?
Your body never forgets. You have memory B cells to gluten. You cannot eat a little gluten. The studies show that those people that have, those celiacs that have exposure to gluten once a month, their relative risk of dying early is sixfold higher.
Because of that's what the antibodies are. That's what the autoimmune response is.
That's right. Because the memory B cells get turned on, or they say, hey, the gluten's here. Turn on the assembly line. You start making the antibodies, and the antibodies continue for 3 to 6 months. You've got elevated antibodies from one exposure. One exposure. Your daughter's birthday cake, because you didn't take the time to get a gluten-free birthday cake. And you take one bite of the birthday cake for 3 to 6 months, you've got elevated antibodies. Now,
interesting.
Now, we'll tie this together because I know we have to go soon. What happens is your body is making antibodies to gluten. So the peptide that it's making antibodies to is 33 amino acids long. That's the most common one. There are many, but that's the most common one. So I'm just going to say AABCD. I'm not going to say the 33 letters. All right? I'll just say AABCD. So here's your antibodies going after AABCD everywhere in the bloodstream. Okay. And remember, there's no lanes of traffic. Everything's bouncing around in there. And the antibodies are looking for AABCD, firing a chemical bullet. AABCD, firing a chemical bullet. The blood goes past your thyroid. The surface of your thyroid facing the bloodstream is made up of proteins and fats. Those proteins are made up of amino acids that are hundreds of amino acids long. But the hundreds of amino acids long proteins that make up the surface of the thyroid facing the bloodstream include AABCD. So your antibodies to gluten, AABCD, oh, look over there, AABCD, boom.
Right.
And you fire a chemical bullet at the thyroid. You damage the thyroid cell. Now your body has to make thyroid antibodies to get rid of the damaged cell. And you have toast for breakfast, AABCD.
Wow.
Sandwich for lunch, AABCD. Boom. Pasta for dinner, AABCD. Boom, 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 boom. And you make antibodies to thyroid, antibodies to thyroid to get rid of the damaged cells so you can make new cells. Get rid of the damaged cells so you can make new cells. Get rid of the damaged cells so you can make new cells. Until this is a self-fulfilling pathway. Now you have an autoimmune thyroid disease that was triggered by a sensitivity to gluten.
And your 20s, and you have this, and this develops in your 50s, because for 30 years it's been developing this rep, the repetitiveness.
Correct, correct. But for some people it develops when they're 12, like your daughter. I mean, it can develop at any point, because that's the weak link in your family's chain, is the thyroid. For somebody else, it's the myelin in their brain. And they develop AABCD to the myelin in the brain, because proteins are hundreds of amino acids long. AABCD is a very common sequence in there. And so they make antibodies to myelin, and they get MS. For someone else, it's to their heart, and they make antibodies to your heart, and you get cardiomyopathies and congestive heart failure.
Right.
And this is published. This is Mayo Clinic publishes this. And so that's why a gluten sensitivity can manifest in any autoimmune condition.
That is a beautiful way to wrap it up. So when people are saying, well, I'm not allergic to wheat, where else is your body's weak point? And it actually could link back to that. That's fascinating. That's why they say everybody's allergic to some form of grain.
Well, that's true. That's exactly right. And it just depends on where the weak link in your chain is as to where it's going to manifest. Remember I said earlier, for every one person that has stomach problems or abdominal problems with a gluten sensitivity, there are eight that don't. It's in your joints, it's in your muscles, it's in your bones, it's in your brain, it's in your thyroid, it's wherever your weak link is. That's where you get the symptoms of a gluten sensitivity.
Okay, so now that is why you need to listen to the whole gluten summit that Tom was talking about, because there's 29 experts on all different types of autoimmune triggers for those types of grains. It's not
That's
just gluten.
Exactly right. I talk about the whole mechanism. I talk about the entire mechanism with each of these experts. Before our show, I just got off the phone with Professor Michael Marsh in Oxford, England, and to interview him for the next summit. And he graciously accepted. Professor Marsh, if you get an endoscopy, that's a tube going down to your throat, to your stomach, to see if you have celiac disease. The report is Marsh 1, Marsh 2, Marsh 3. This is Marsh. This is
wow.
The godfather of the wall. And when When you hear him on the gluten summit, it's just remarkable.
The doctors that you have on here, what is it, Alessio Fasano, who was the one that, he won an award for this, right?
Yes, he got the Linus Pauling Award 2 years ago for this. We think he'll also get the Nobel Prize. We really do, because he identified the mechanism in the development of autoimmune diseases. And many of his papers talk about this. There are two things that trigger every time you have exposure to gluten, you get intestinal permeability. Every time.
All right. Well, go to the website, which is theawareshow.com/Tom. Theawareshow.com/Tom. All 29 guests are available to you, and you can listen to every single one of these shows. It's over an hour long. I mean, we haven't even gotten to the whole point about the, oh God, the solutions here and the diet here that does work, and the what was the other thing I wanted to ask you about? The oh, look at this website. Something about the was it an oil? Polypeptides, colostrum, all that. Yeah, and the benefits of that. I mean, there's so much here. So just in a nutshell, okay, everyone, go get that summit and listen to that and take copious notes and forward it onto your families and friends, because they don't understand what's going on with their bodies yet, and it's better to learn this now than 5-10 years from now when it is an issue. But what, in a nutshell, do you suggest to eat?
Eat God-made foods, not man-made foods.
What comes from the ground, right? God-made foods.
Yes, so bottom line, you know, the closer we are to organic, fresh produce with some quality meats, some people don't want to eat meat, fine. It's a lot harder for you, but you can do a healthy diet, but you better know what you're doing, because the sickest people I see are vegetarians, because they are righteous in their minds, and they don't have a clue how to feed the body properly, and they have severe protein deficiencies.
Well, so, I mean, you can get proteins from fish. Some vegetarians eat fish. And whole vegetable, organic,
grass-fed beef, free-range chickens, eggs from free-range chickens, wild fish. Yes, there's mercury in the fish, and there's things we have to deal with everything now in our culture today.
Cheese.
You know, the proteins of a cow are meant for a cow. They're 8 times the size of human protein. So the proteins in milk and in cheese are 8 times the size of human breast milk protein. They're meant for a cow.
But do you recommend beef then, eating beef?
How many people in our world look like cows?
None. But wait, do you recommend eating beef?
Morbid obesity is the most threatening problem in our culture today. Because
I thought you meant the black and white and everything.
It's the size. The foods that we're eating are just terrible for us. They're terrible. And it's not just milk, of course, but that's a component. It's not just the trans fats, but that's a component. You know, it's not just the poor quality whites, white sugar, white flour, white rice, but that's a component. That when you listen to the 7 nutritionists on the Gluten Summit, they all talk about aspects of how do you put together an eating style that works for you and your family.
Good.
There's no one diet that's right for everybody.
Great. Okay, good. That's important. Yes. And so that's on there, and you can start to dig in, drill down. And really, it's, as Dr. Brian said, the right diet is the diet that works for you. And when you can eat a diet that allows you to have brilliant mental function, agility in the body, a good fit, thin body, and no inflammation, that's the diet that works for you. That's basically the diet that works for you. And you'll understand, you know what hurts you and what doesn't. But it's all about empowerment. This is the new medicine. It's about educating us. So we go into our functional medicine doctor with 80% of the information that we need to know. And then we perfect it and fine-tune it from there. And that is an optimal relationship. That is optimal health right there. When the empowered patient goes into the functional medicine doctor and says, I know this, I've tried this, I've tested this, here's these results, let's go from here. Wow. That's a dream for you, isn't it? Yes. So real quick, someone's asking, so did you say yes to red meat or no?
For most individuals, yes. For most individuals. There are some that do better without. But if you're, for example, if you're blood type O, absolutely yes. Blood type O's are the oldest blood type on the planet. Our most ancient ancestors were hunters. You
right.
need high levels of protein. High quality protein.
I'm an A, and that's one of the things I'm allergic to. I'm allergic to red meat.
Yeah, well, in that case, it's not right for you. So
right.
The only thing that everyone needs, everyone, is water, good quality water. But aside from that, you know, there are some common things that we all feel good with. But as you tweak it down for you as an individual, red meats can be the hell. I'm an A also, and I love red meats. And I'll do red meats maybe twice a week. I do fish 2-3-4 times a week, chicken once or twice, you know, but I'll do red meats maybe twice a week, buffalo perhaps, always organic. Always grass-fed.
And then these polypeptides, colostrum, is that a supplement?
Yeah, no, that's a whole world to talk about. And
okay, next time, go get the summit. Go to theawareshow.com/Tom. There's so many solutions, filled with solutions, 29 experts talking about solutions. We've talked a lot about awareness here, which was needed for an hour. Go get the solutions, go to the summit, empower yourself, please. I love you. Thank you so much for your information. You're amazing. I really appreciated your energy level and your passion for this subject. It's just inspiring. Thank you so much, Dr. O'Brien.
Thank you, Lisa. It's a pleasure to be with you. Thank you.
You too. You too. And for all my listeners, go get that summit. Empower yourself. Dive in. Take your family on this journey with you. Parents aging and not, you know, just do it. Just do it. Go to the website, theawareshow.com/Tom. And until next time, I invite you to stay aware.